I was gonna say welcome. Usually I say hi and welcome,
but yes,
just straight into welcome. Hi and welcome to episode 88 of C3 Crystals, Cauldrons, and Cocktails. I'm Ren.
And I'm River.
And this week we are talking about some fun witchy places to go. I know that we've talked about this a lot, and I'm glad we're finally able to do it, you know, talk about it. And this was requested by one of our patrons, Sarah from Canada. So thank you so much for this suggestion, and I hope it's everything you wanted.
Yeah, we have a lot to talk about, so we only have a couple places, so we're gonna do like a whole set of these for multiple
places to go, because I think in this episode we're only gonna be talking about three. Two in deep detail, and you're gonna understand why the third isn't so detail-y. That's not a word. But
it's a Ren word.
Yeah, detail-y. Add that to my list. But first, what are we drinking?
So we're coming up on June. Actually, this is out June 2nd. So we're in June. Mm-hmm. And the full moon in June is the strawberry moon. So Ren's husband said, oh, you should make a strawberry moon drink. So we got some strawberry sherbet and some tequila and mixed them. So it's kind of like a slushy, a tequila strawberry slushy. And I like salt around my rim. And I think Ren likes sugar around her rim. So you can have it either way. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're drinking. It's nice and cool and summery and wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Nice and blissful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That could be just the tequila, but you know.
Yeah. So I guess I'll start first.
Okay.
And what I started with in like witchy places to go, which is one of the places I would love to go, is Scotland.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So what better to start off with a little bit of witchcraft history in Scotland? Now, it isn't all pretty. It never really is.
Our history is not pretty. Nope.
Yeah. So the history of witchcraft in Scotland is a complex and dark chapter in the country's past. It spans several centuries and is characterized by widespread fear, persecution, and execution of individuals accused of practicing witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has like a lot of, there's like a overview of witch trials and witchcraft history in Scotland itself, where I'm going to break it down with the periods.
Okay.
By period.
Okay.
So in the early period, witchcraft was considered a crime during the medieval times in Scotland. The first record of execution for witchcraft took place in 1424 when a woman named Alice Keitler was accused of practicing sorcery.
Can you imagine having your name go down in history because you were the first person killed for witchcraft?
No.
And the last person persecuted in the United States also is famous because she was the last one. I mean, just crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's awful.
It is awful.
Just like, you just want to be able to practice what you practice in peace. And and then from the early period, we move into the Witchcraft Act of 1563. Mm-hmm. The act was passed by the Scottish Parliament, making the practice of witchcraft a capital offense. The act declared witchcraft.
Death, right? Capital offense.
Like absolutely, like cannot do it. If you are caught, you are sentenced to death, execution. Death.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The act declared witchcraft as a form of hearsay and provided legal grounds for persecution and execution of those who were seen as witches.
Okay.
So now we move into the witch trials. So from the late 16th century to the early 18th century, Scotland witnessed a series of witch trials. These trials were often driven by superstitious beliefs, religious fervor, and social tensions.
Mm-hmm.
Accusations of witchcraft were frequently based on rumors, gossip, and personal vendettas, which we've talked about before.
Yeah, men who were pissed off that a woman wouldn't drop her panties for them, and suddenly she was a witch, or a guy who was a little strong, weird.
Strong-headed people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then we get into the, and I know I'm not going to say North Berwick. I think it's Berwick witch trials. One of the most infamous witch trials in Scotland history occurred in Northern Berwick in the late 16th century.
Infamous doesn't sound good.
No, the trials were initiated after accusations of a witch coven plotting to kill King James of the time of Scotland, later James the First of England.
Oh, wow. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I hadn't
either. Did we talk about this? We talked about witch trials, but I don't remember that one.
But we never really got into Scotland.
Witches plotting to kill a king. That sounds vaguely familiar. Okay.
When I was doing the research,
it didn't ring bells with you.
Yeah. And is that, that's King James the Sixth.
Yes. Who is then King James the First of England.
James the First, yeah.
Yeah.
So many innocent people were tortured and executed during these trials because of, one word of another.
Yeah.
So then now we get into King James the Sixth and demonology or demonology. Mm-hmm. So King James played a significant role in promoting witch hunts and intensifying fear of witchcraft. And in 1597, he published a book called Demonology, which detailed his beliefs about witchcraft and provided guidance on how to identify and prosecute witches.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Like he didn't have enough to do in running the country. He had to do this.
He had to. Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus.
I mean, I feel like no matter what group. Sadly, this was a group of witches who were plotting to kill him, allegedly, so allegedly you had this whole group of people wanting to kill you. I mean, and he just associated it with all witches. And so obviously he, pinpointed it. I would have a personal, thing about it too.
But they probably weren't really plotting to kill him.
They probably weren't. Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least they weren't witches.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then with this led to a witch prickers and witch finders.
Oh, yeah.
So during the witch trials, witch prickers and witch finders were employed to search for the devil's mark on suspected witches. These individuals would use sharp instruments to puncture the skin of the accused in search of a spot that did not bleed.
Oh, man.
I know we talked about this, I think.
I think we did, too.
To be a sign of witchcraft. Yeah, I know we talked about this.
Yeah, because I feel like we talked about them using fake instruments that the needle would go back up inside so that they could get paid. Yeah.
Yeah. So numbers of accused and executed. The exact numbers of people accused and executed for witchcraft in Scotland is difficult to determine. However, it is estimated that hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals were accused and many were put to death during the witch trials. So this brings us to the decline and end of the witch trials, where the witch trials in Scotland began to decline in the late 17th century due to changing attitudes, skepticism, increased scrutiny of the legal process, etc., where the Witchcraft Act was repealed.
Overturned
in 1736, marking the end of the era of the witch trials in Scotland.
Wow.
So after hearing all of that, the history of witchcraft in Scotland remains a tragic reminder of the human capacity for fear and persecution. Mm-hmm. And then today, efforts are made to remember and commemorate the victims of the witch trials as a way to learn from the mistakes of the past, which I thought was really, really nice that Scotland in a whole tries to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know a lot of the locations that I'm going to talk about really brings in like the history and they kind of honor it in a way.
That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Cause I was thinking with that kind of history, I don't know that I want to go and visit those places as a witch.
But they do a very great job with taking their history and learning from it. As for a lot of places, you can't really say that.
Mm-hmm.
But they've done a really great job.
Okay.
Doing that. So the first one I'm going to talk about is the Witch's Well. Now, there's a little bit more on it. So I kind of hit briefly on all of these because I talked about 8 different places that you could go see.
Okay.
And in some, there were some more interesting facts that I added in. So there's definitely more to research on these.
For sure.
The Witch's Well is one of the most famous ones. If you type in places to see, like, witchy-wise in Scotland, the Witch's Well is the first thing that pops up.
Okay.
So the well can be found at the foot of Edinburgh Castle and marks the spot where 300 women accused of witchcraft were burned at the stake.
Oof.
Yeah, I know. The cast iron fountain and plaque memorialize those executed who were denied a proper burial due to the accusations. So their remains were often left where they died. So I think the Witch's Well is just something as a witch to go to honor those who have
our past. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely go. This Me seems too. Like a amazing place to go. And just, I mean, could you imagine the energy there too?
Oh, for sure.
Like, I just think the Witch's Well would probably be it's not like a place to stay. It's not, it's just you go, you take a moment and you leave. You know, it's not anything where it's like an overnight stay where I have a couple that are seem very fun. But
yeah, that one I would, it would be like you said, a solemn one, but it would be definitely worth honoring past witches and past innocents that weren't witches. That were killed there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. Okay. This one's a little bit better.
Okay.
I give you doom, 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 light and fluffy. So in Scotland, they have the Museum of Witchcraft and Magic in Bowes Castle.
Okay.
So while not located in Scotland itself, it's, you know, Scotland and the UK and England.
Right.
All, you know, this museum is in Cornwall, England.
Okay.
It's dedicated to witchcraft and magic and houses an extensive collection of artifacts related to witchcraft.
Hmm.
They are rated 4.7 stars on TripAdvisor, and their description states, the Museum of Witchcraft and House and Magic Houses. Wow. Hold on. Let me start over.
The
Museum of Witchcraft and Magic houses one of the world's largest collections of items relating to witchcraft, the occult, and magic. And they house over 3,000 objects.
Man. No wonder it takes a castle.
I know. 3,000 objects that are related to magic, the occult, witchcraft.
Okay.
It has been in the picturesque Cornish coastal village of Bowes Castle since 1960 and is one of Cornwall's most popular museums rated highly on TripAdvisor.
Hmm.
The museum intrigues visitors with its collections of charms, curses, herbs, healing properties, like healing objects, and sea witchcraft items.
Oh, how cool. I would love to see the sea witchcraft stuff. That would be cool.
Some of their most popular items are magical tools such as athames, wands, and other Wiccan objects, like such as scrying, black mirrors, crystal balls, and collection of protection talismans made by soldiers in the trenches of World War I.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool.
The museum also has an extensive library with 7,000 books.
Wow.
And an archive of documents which can be viewed online or visited by appointment. The museum does not allow food, drinks, or dogs.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I can understand that because, like, all of this stuff is old, ancient, you know. But it's definitely worth a visit. And I would say I would the number one on my list.
That museum.
Well, yeah. That's where I'm going. Well, maybe two.
That's where I'm going.
That's where I'll be there.
How cool. Okay.
I think it's cool. Now the food and drinks and dogs, you know, I go to eat food, I go to drink, and I have a dog and they're not allowed in, but I'll let it pass for the amount of things that they have. Like, can you imagine 7,000 books?
I can't even imagine.
3,000 objects related to anything witchy.
That's cool.
I think it's so cool. So next I move into the witchery in Edinburgh. Now,
okay.
This was so cool because, like, you look at it and you're like, oh, it's witchery. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, what now, does that mean?
It's not what you think.
Okay.
Now, they honor and hone the ideals of respecting witches and everything that happened in Scotland throughout their history.
Okay.
But it doesn't really have anything to do with witchcraft, really.
Really? So but it's the called witchery, The Witchery. How interesting.
Yeah. Okay. The Witchery is a restaurant and hotel known for its gothic decor and dark atmosphere. It offers a unique dining experience and a chance to immerse yourself in the ambiance of witchcraft and mystery.
Okay.
So they kind of took their history, like the history of Scotland itself, and like went with it to create a
restaurant
destination.
And hotel. How cool is that? So it's a hotel you can still stay at.
Yep.
Now, how fun would that be?
So I looked at their website, and just to see how much it would be to book a room and everything, their website itself is dark and mysterious. Like, it matches the vibe that they're trying to instill. Mm-hmm. It looks wonderful. Their food and wine list make me want to sell everything that I have right now and just go.
I love it.
It's about €1,000 per night.
Yeah. It's a little steep.
It's a little pricey, but the rooms are very historic, and it looks like you step back in time.
Okay.
Like, some of the rooms I was looking at, shows who are based in, you know, the Renaissance and stuff like that. And like, you see their bedrooms of like kings and queens, you know, have this, I'm thinking specifically more of like Rain, you know, the show.
Oh,
Rain.
Yeah.
And they have all these ornate like beddings and like the beds are like these like really nice. It's exactly like that. So the experience, I think, would be an experience of a lifetime, because it's like you're stepping back into that history. You get to immerse yourself in that type. And especially if you're a witch, this is a beautiful place to stay. You're right there in that history. It's like you're back in time with the decor. It would just be amazing. Plus, you have that food and the amazing drinks. It just sounds like a great vacation to me.
That sounds awesome.
Now, €1,000 a night, I might just go eat there. I'm probably
that's
stay.
True. Yeah, that's
but you
true.
Can still go and eat there. The food looked amazing. It's basically all like traditional Scottish cuisine mixed with, you know, it's just a little bit of everything. Oh my gosh.
It would be so fun to podcast from there.
It would be.
Go to these places and do a podcast
it
from there.
It would be so much fun.
On site, live. That would be cool.
So now the next place is called the Isle of Skye, which I thought this was so cool.
I've heard of that one. Yeah.
It's a beautiful, like, okay, let me just, there, it's a landscape.
Okay.
So it's known for the stunning landscapes, and the Isle of Skye has a rich folklore tradition.
Okay.
Visit Fairy Glen, a mystical landscape with cone-shaped hills and winding paths which locals believe to be a place of magical energy and enchantment.
Okay.
And then from Wikipedia, I have the Isle of Skye, connected to Scotland's northwest coast by bridge, is known for its rugged landscapes, picturesque fishing villages, and medieval castles.
Cool.
The largest island in the Inner Hebrides.
Don't know. Archipelago.
It has an indented coastline of peninsulas and narrow locks radiating out from a monster mountain interior. Okay. And so the town of Portree, a base for exploring the island, features harborside pubs and boutiques. There's a lot of history of the land itself, but there isn't enough time to delve more into this, so I kind of like cut it off right there. But basically, I'm going to take away, these are enchanted lands, basically.
Is this where that the Outlander books are set, and the series is set on the Isle of Skye, where she goes back in time?
Yes, I believe so.
I think so. I know that song, the Isle of Skye song, is their theme song, but I think it's supposed to have been and that portion of Scotland that she goes back
I
in
think
time.
So it's all just these stunning landscapes of mountains and hills and villages.
I wonder if they filmed it there.
Maybe.
How cool would that be?
I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, it was gorgeous wherever it was set. Mm-hmm. Might be Canada. Yeah. A lot of filming goes on in Canada that is all gorgeous too, but it would be cool if it were really filmed there.
Yeah. But I didn't talk entirely about it. There's so much more that you could talk about. You could talk about the folklore. We could talk about, you know, everything about it, but I just kind of wanted to hit on the mystical properties that this land offers that Scotland, what do I say? Scotland citizens.
Livers. I was thinking, you know, liver, pancreas. What are we talking about? Internal organs.
They live there. Scotland residents always Scotland talk about liver. This being a mystical place for any type of going. Yeah, I know.
You're so funny.
So now I'm going to talk about the Clava Cairns in Inverness.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I butchered that. But I think we had
one listener already correct us on something that we had. This might be the same word, but we do our best, people.
We do our best. And I just thought, you know, I was like, maybe I shouldn't do that because I don't know how to pronounce it. But it's something I think very interesting that it would be a nice place to visit based on witchcraft and its history.
So tell me about the witchcraft there or the history. So
these are ancient burial chambers and standing stones.
Oh.
And it's near Inverness, and they are steeped in history and are said to have connections to druids and witchcraft. Okay. And so the site exudes an eerie atmosphere and is believed to hold spiritual significance. And so from the website itself, like I, you know, searched up Clava Cairns or prehistoric, you know, like the prehistoric witchy lands of Scotland. And from the site itself, Clava Cairns, or they're also known as prehistoric burial cairns of Bull Naren of Clerva, are a group of three Bronze Age cairns located near Inverness. It is a hugely significant and exceptional, well-preserved prehistoric site. It is a fantastic example of distant history of Highland Scotland, dating back 4,000 years.
Yeah, so
these are basically like standing stones.
Because I'm like, what exactly is a cairn? I can't picture it. So I looked I looked it up, and it says a cairn is a man-made pile of stones raised for a purpose, usually as a marker or a burial mound.
Yeah.
And it comes from the Scottish Gaelic. I don't know if it's pronounced cairn. It's C-A with a little slash on it, R-N, in Gaelic.
Yeah, these are 4,000 years old.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So the cemetery was used in two periods. At around 2000 BC, a row of large cairns was built, where three of which can still be seen today.
Okay.
1,000 years later, the cemetery was reused and new burials were placed in some of the existing cairns, and three smaller monuments were built, including a kerb, K-E-R-B, cairn.
Okay.
Cairn. I don't, it's C-A-I-R-N, cairn. I don't.
Yeah. It just sounds like you're saying Karen.
Yeah, like a Karen. I know. That's not right, but and then traces of smaller cemetery can also be seen at Milton of Clava, a short distance up the valley to the west.
Okay.
And I'm gonna say cairns at Balnurin of Clava, extended along a gravel terrace raised above the River Naren.
Okay.
So excavations have found evidence for farming on the site before any of these monuments were built.
Okay.
The settlement was directly replaced by the cairns, and it even seems possible that some of the material used to build them had been taken from demolished houses.
Interesting.
Now, I couldn't find anything else about how it had connected to druids and witchcraft, but when something's a burial site, that's extremely powerful, especially for 4,000 years. Like, that's a strong.
I can't imagine the energy there. I just can't.
It has to be extreme.
Even fathom it. Yeah. That's crazy. Definitely worth a visit for sure.
Definitely. And could you imagine going there and just like touching those stones?
Mm-hmm.
4,000 years.
Just feeling that energy would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Now this one, I'm going to butcher the name. Do you want to give it a go?
Take it. The Trossachs?
Trossachs?
Stirlingshire? Trossachs?
Stirlingshire? Okay, I'm going to go with Trossachs because I have no idea.
Or Trossish? Because I know
when they... I'm just going to say the Trossachs.
Trossachs? Okay.
Okay, so the Trossachs, Stirlingshire.
We're going to get corrections on this one. I know we are.
Okay, the Trossachs... Wow. National Park is known for its picturesque scenery and association.
Strawberry moons, baby.
Yeah. I was going to say this is a tongue twister. Okay. With Scottish folklore. So this one I only really talk about as like a hit on it. Like it's literally like only three sentences that I have. They're basically another landscapes.
Okay.
So, well,
I imagine there's so many beautiful places over there.
Yeah, I know. And actually, these landscapes inspired Sir Walter Scott's Lady of the Lake.
Really?
And immerse yourself in the mystical atmosphere of the area.
So, Lady of the Lake, like from King Arthur times?
Yeah. Yeah.
How cool is that?
I thought that was very cool, but like it's just another beautiful scenery.
I know there's a
lot of history probably behind it, but again, we just don't have enough time to talk about it. But I thought it was something you guys could probably definitely. Oh yeah, you guys are going to Scotland. You guys are going to England.
Definitely
go here. Yeah.
Okay.
One last one, I think of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
No, I have two more. I'm just kidding. This one is the Isle of Mull or Mull, M-U-L-L.
Okay. Okay.
So Mull is associated with legends and myths, including stories of witches and witchcraft. And so it's it's a picturesque village.
Okay.
And I looked at pictures of this. I thought it was so cool. So it's Tobermory. Beautiful, colorful buildings along the coast, you know, like right on the mountains, mm-hmm. like in the water right there. Mm-hmm. And the island's rugged landscapes are also steeped in enchantment. And there were a lot of stories themselves on their website that was super cool to just kind of read. Like, for example, they have mystical happenings where...
Okay.
Man just dropped dead out of nowhere. Like, I don't know what happened to him. But this was hundreds of years ago. So
okay. It could have been anything. Okay.
Yeah. But they're like, this is a mystical happening. And they have like more current ones.
Wow.
I can't remember off the top of my head. Oh my gosh. So cool.
Okay.
But the pictures are beautiful. And this is a place I would probably go for the food, for the colorful buildings, mm-hmm. and it's like literally the mountains on the coast and then mm-hmm. water. So like
very
something
cool.
Beautiful. Okay. This is the last one. The Hermitage Dunkeld.
Dunkeld. Okay.
Hermitage Dunkeld, located near Dunkeld. In Perthshire. See, I got that one.
Okay.
The Hermitage is a beautiful woodland area with towering trees, waterfalls, and the Ossian's Hall, a stunning architectural structure. It is said to be a place of inspirations for writers and artists and has an air of mysticism about it. So could you just imagine these massive, like, tall trees, woodland areas?
I would love
it. That just... ring-a-ding-ding, like perfect for a witchy little outgoing.
Yep, I would love that.
I would too. And I don't know. I feel like I kind of associate myself with like the dark mysticalness mm-hmm. of, you know, witchcraft. And so that's mm-hmm. perfect to me. But there are probably people who are listening who are like, ew, no, I work with the sun, duh. Like, so
right. mm-hmm.
maybe, and like Scotland does have that dreary, moody type mm-hmm. of vibe to it, like cloudy, rainy.
It's so gorgeous though.
Comfy, you know, mm-hmm. but if mm-hmm. somebody's I mean, it's definitely, you need to probably go see these at least once in your lifetime if mm-hmm. you practice, because this has history upon history with witches. These places are have probably strong energies and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just honor what's there. But mm-hmm. if this isn't like your vibe, then you definitely, like, you don't have to, you know.
Right, right.
It's a suggestion.
Right.
And then I also want to say, remember to approach these places with respect for their culture and historical significance.
Oh, for sure.
And while they may be associated with witchcraft and folklore, it's important to understand and appreciate the stories and beliefs that surround them,
mm-hmm.
which I think is very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now do I go into my next one, or do you want to do your next one?
Whichever way you want to do it. If you want to talk about Stonehenge next, we can do that, or I can talk about New Orleans.
Okay. I guess I can just go ahead and just talk.
Okay. Okay.
And then we'll end on New Orleans, because that one seems really fun.
Okay.
I lost my spot, so give me. Okay. So now I'm going to start talking about Stonehenge, which I know we did a TikTok on this one. We did mm-hmm. a TikTok on Scotland and
Edinburgh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Edinburgh and the Stonehenge. The Stonehenge. Mm-hmm. So what is it? What's the Stonehenge? Stonehenge is a prehistoric monument located in Wiltshire, England. Mm-hmm. So it's not too far off from, I mean, I don't know, miles or kilometers wise, but it's on the same continent
yeah.
as Scotland, yeah. where mm-hmm. I just talked about. Mm-hmm. So you could basically, if you are on that continent, you just country. I don't know. You just hit it all.
Just hit everything over there.
Go. It is one of the most famous archaeological sites in the world and has been designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Okay.
I've never heard of that before.
Me neither.
Okay. I didn't look into it. Should have. The history of Stonehenge spans thousands of years, and the exact purpose and methods used to construct it are still the subject of much speculation and study.
Yeah,
so this
that's
is where
crazy.
This is where I kind of talked about, like, yeah, like, this could associate with witchcraft, but, you know, like, there's still so much we don't know.
I mean, it does tie into the Saturn, well, our Sabbats, but it into the astrological events like the equinoxes and all that. So
okay, so here's what we kind of know. The construction of Stonehenge began around 5,000 years ago during the late Neolithic period.
Okay.
The monument was built in several phases over a span of approximately 1,500 years, with the earliest known structure being a circular ditch and bank known as a hinge moment.
Which
I don't really know how else to explain it, but this is just kind of how they're connected and what surrounds it.
Okay.
Dating back around 3100 BCE, this early phase consists of circular bank and ditch with a large entrance on the northeast side. So it's like basically them creating that circular pattern and mm-hmm. using the stones to create that shape.
Circles are witchy anyway. It could have been mm-hmm. cast as it could have been a place where ancient witches or druids, you know, cast circles mm-hmm. of protection for when they were doing their magic.
Or this just could be a really super large burial site, like the carriage.
Could have been. Yeah. Yeah.
The most striking feature of Stonehenge is its arrangement of large standing stones.
Mm-hmm.
The first stone circle was created around 2500 BCE during the late Neolithic period. Now, I know the periods and all of that are kind of mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. But if you mm-hmm. know, like, period times, which mm-hmm. I kind of do. I know. Yeah. These stones, known as sarsens, are massive sandstone blocks that were sourced from the Marlborough Downs, about 20 miles or 32 kilometers north of the Stonehenge. So they had to, whoever created these things,
mm-hmm.
had to drag these ton-sized things, these
That's
stones,
crazy.
Over. And so some of the sarsens weigh up to 50 tons and stand 20 feet or 6 meters tall.
That's crazy.
So, like, Now, you have to also think about the Egyptians. I can always figure out the Egyptians, you know, but like pyramids. The Egyptians, when they made the pyramids, they had to also carry these ton weight, like tons. I'm not kidding, literal tons of stone from point A to point B. And they didn't even have the wheel that we know of. So how in the world? Now, I don't know during this time if the wheel was created or not.
Well, I'm just so curious to know why it took from the time that they did the circle in 3100 BCE until they created the first stone circle in 2500 BCE. What took 600 years to do that?
I don't know. Now,
interesting.
I think it's cool because, I mean, if it is a burial site, then that means that they just added on to the burial that 600 years later, which is really cool and beautiful and all of that. But I would feel like with excavating and, you know, trying to figure it out, we would find bodies, we would find bones, maybe, I don't know.
Something,
but it's, yeah. So inside the outer circle, a smaller inner horseshoe arrangement of stones known as blue stones were constructed. These blue stones are smaller in size and were sourced from Pearsall Hills in southwest Wales, approximately 150 miles or 240 kilometers away from Stonehenge.
That is crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, how did they do that?
Unless they had smaller.
Maybe they had dragons.
And
the dragons flew them.
Feasible. Feasible. At this point, I would say yes.
I mean, that's crazy.
No, yeah. But also, I'm not sure if the outer circle versus the inner circle, which one was there first, you know, because some pieces were added in much later. And so apparently, like, obviously in 600 years, you're going to have some sort of advancement where it might be easier to transport or something. But yeah, it's very cool. The transportation of these stones over such a long distance is remarkable, you know, as we're talking about, because it's before modern day engineering. It's before anything, before the wheel. I don't know.
No cranes.
No cranes. No, not at all.
Crazy.
So the purpose of Stonehenge is still a matter of debate among archaeologists and historians. Various theories have been proposed, including that it was a ceremonial or religious site and like a astronomy. Observatory.
It does line up like on it Letha, does line up. Which is coming up. The sun is going to hit it exactly in that. I mean, so that's got to at least be part of what it was used for. It can't be coincidence.
Yeah.
So
I see a little bit of the astronomical side to it because, I mean, it's funny because with the creation of the pyramids, and I know I've said this before, but they're like, oh my gosh, it lines up almost exactly with like Orion's belt, like three stars. I can't remember. Those three stars. And it's like, well, what do you think they had to look at all day, all night? I mean, you know, there was no light pollution like how we have now with major cities because like they didn't have electricity. So their light sources were fire, probably most likely. And so when you stare up into the sky, they had to have seen the most crisp, clear images of the stars. And so I don't understand what's so astonishing to people. And they had to have been wicked smart, too,
to create
these structures. So it's not hard to mathematically formulate, oh, this is where I need to build this and have this line up here so that it lines up exactly in the same way as the stars that we stare at every night.
They used the stars also for divination and all kinds of important things in their culture.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not so far out from having Stonehenge line up perfectly with the sun and certain cycles and blah, blah, blah. It's also theorized as a burial site or a place of healing and pilgrimage, which I've heard a lot about that. The healing and pilgrimage was like a home base where people could move to and from and have this home base to help take mm-hmm. a break on a day's journey and all of that. Mm-hmm. So the alignment of the stones with the movements of the sun and other celestial bodies have led many to believe that Stonehenge had an astronomical function, probably serving as a calendar or a site for rituals related mm-hmm. to celestial events. Absolutely. Now, I like the calendar thing. The calendar is really cool. Mm-hmm. Stonehenge remained in use for several centuries with ongoing modifications and additions. Over time, the stones underwent rearrangement and some were even removed or damaged. By the Bronze Age, the monument had fallen into disuse and it gradually became buried under layers of earth and debris. In the 20th century, efforts were made to restore and preserve Stonehenge. Excavations and research have shed light on its construction techniques and the people who built it, and how it could possibly function.
Mm-hmm.
Today, Stonehenge attracts millions of visitors each year and continues to fascinate people with its mysterious and awe-inspiring presence.
That is very cool.
Now, I just have like a little short blib on how it's related to witchcraft.
Okay. All right.
So Stonehenge has been associated with various methods, legends, and beliefs throughout history, including connections to witchcraft and pagan rituals. However, it is important to note that the specific relationship between Stonehenge and witchcraft is largely based on folklore and modern interpretations rather than historical evidence.
Good point.
Because we do not have any evidence. And most of everything that we can think of with Stonehenge is a theory.
And what the way we look at things is not the same. I mean, mm-hmm. we are putting our own modern culture slant yeah. on it. That's the right word. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. I often think about if aliens were to come, if our society just dropped dead with everything standing the way it is, what in the world would they think these monitors and TVs were in every single
yeah.
room?
I think about that a lot.
They'd probably think, oh, it must have been something of highly religious value because they're in every room of every house.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like a toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
a
what
toilet.
If they think a toilet is? Well, I think it's easy to understand that toilet is like our way to get rid of waste because of all the pipelines and everything that we have connected.
Maybe.
But like a pool, a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. I've always thought about this. It's a hole in the ground. And they can't tell whether or not there was water in it.
It was so a place just, of religious, you just don't know what they're going to think.
No idea. So yeah, it's something like this where it could be mm-hmm. something completely different and something so simple to, you know, whoever created it. But to us, we're like, we're putting all these like twists and turns and trying to understand what it mm-hmm. is.
Based on our concepts of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So off of that, in contemporary witchcraft and modern pagan practices, Stonehenge is sometimes seen as a sacred site and mm-hmm. is occasionally used for ceremonies, rituals, and gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
Some practitioners of Wicca and other pagan traditions may visit Stonehenge during specific times of the year, such as the summer solstice or the spring and autumn equinoxes, to celebrate mm-hmm. and honor the cycles of nature and changing seasons.
And the wheel of the year. Yeah,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
for sure.
It's worth mentioning that Stonehenge predates the concept of witchcraft as we understand it today.
Mm-hmm.
So the monument was constructed thousands of years before the emergence of modern witchcraft traditions.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I feel like there's always been healers. There's always
absolutely.
Been,
you know, yeah.
But to definitely. Our understanding, modern, you know, day witchcraft. And then Stonehenge was likely created by ancient societies for purposes that are still not fully understood, such as religious or ceremonial activities, astronomical observations, and community gatherings, like we've discussed.
Or aliens.
Aliens or dragons and...
Dragons, aliens, yeah. You know.
Over the centuries, Stonehenge has captivated the imagination of people and has been the subject of many legends, myths, and mystical beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
These associations have contributed to the allure and have created a sense of mystery and wonder around the monument. However, it is important to approach the connections with a critical mindset and recognize that historical evidence regarding Stonehenge's exact purpose and beliefs of its builders is limited.
Yeah, and it's just theory.
Mm-hmm.
We don't
all
know.
Theory.
We don't
know. I would love to think that Stonehenge was created as a way and place for witches alike all around the world to come and celebrate any type of festival or equinox or all of this, but we just don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's used that way now. I think on Letha, there are a lot of people, a lot of witches that gather there and celebrate. I think that would be amazing. I would love to do that.
So cool. And that's definitely why I talked about this, because you can definitely go. Definitely go for Letha. Go for any type of celebration that you...
Yeah, I was looking up. Sorry, there's all kinds of tours and things that you can take and book there. I was looking online when you said you were going to talk about it. And I was like, ooh, how cool is that?
It's so cool. But yeah, millions of people go every year. So why not you be one of those? You know, just go.
Just go.
Just
hey,
go.
Letha is just around the corner. Just go. It's a few weeks from now.
Go. Yeah. It's not like
honey,
it costs thousands
of
dollars.
We're going to Stonehenge. Bye.
Yeah. I'm selling our bed frame and all of that just to cover the flight costs.
Oh, how funny. Yeah. Well, I did New Orleans. So closer, a little closer to home for us. Yes. The history of New Orleans, there is no shortage of supernatural, mystical, paranormal, voodoo, spiritually eccentric folk in New Orleans. It is a city that has a history that's rich in diversity, rich in challenges as well, all of which are reflected in the whole and the beautiful tapestry of their culture. It's a unique place in our world. And then, of course, you probably think about Marie Laveau. She's undoubtedly the most famous witch to have called New Orleans home. And she was actually known as the Voodoo Queen, not just a witch, but the Voodoo Queen.
Oh.
And Louisiana voodoo is its own thing. It's not like the other hoodoo and that kind of thing out there. Voodoo came to Louisiana during the colonial period. The enslaved people from West Africa and the Sub-Sahara brought their culture and beliefs to Louisiana, and that kind of mixed with Catholicism and other things that to make this unique voodoo practice and history in New Orleans. Their practice included working with roots and herbs, creating and using charms and amulets, as well as Catholic church things that they brought into their own practice. In 1972, Mary Oneida Toops became chartered and certified as the founder for the nonprofit Religious Order of Witchcraft, which was it finally officially recognized witchcraft as a religion. Oh. And if you are an American Horror Story fan, you might have caught reference to Mary during the coven season. And if you don't remember her being mentioned, then you you have to remember Madame Delphine LaLaurie, who was really the big bad guy. And Mary in 1972 held a seance at the LaLaurie mansion and claimed to make contact with the infamous and notorious Madame LaLaurie. So where do you go? Where should you go in New Orleans? Yeah. So the first place I found is the Voodoo Authentica of New Orleans Cultural Center and Collection. In addition to being a shop full of handmade items such as puppets and mojo bags, there's also a lot of history and culture on display. And one local says that although the shop is fairly commercialized, as a lot of the shops there in New Orleans are, she said that these employees really know what they're doing. They took the time to help her customize a mojo bag for her needs, as opposed to just selling her, oh, this one's in a box on the shelf.
You know, this one's perfect for blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Here, it's $100. Yeah.
Yeah. They helped her customize what she needed from the shop, and they knew what they were doing. And then there's also the Marie Laveau House of Voodoo shop, which is another voodoo shop. And it's actually run by Marie's family members, which is cool.
And that's very cool.
It is cool. It's still in the family. And their website says, We offer a wide variety of items to help in both learning and practicing spiritual and religious ceremony, tribal masks and statues from around the world symbolizing our ancestors' connection with spirit and earth, talismans and charms directed toward many different supplications. And it's not just for tourists, it's for witches. I mean, there's real stuff that we could go there for the stuff that we need. You don't have to buy witchy stuff there, but I would love to go and buy witchy stuff there.
I was going to say, I'm sold. You're only two in, but I'm sold.
I know. I want to go. Another thing about New Orleans that is very cool to visit are their graveyards. And, you know, New Orleans is known for many things, and its haunted history is certainly part of the city's heart and soul. A number of companies offer tours with various themes that go through the different graveyards. And you got to remember, burying the dead in a place that's built below sea level was a problem. You couldn't bury them under the ground because you'd hit water. So that faced the residents of the French settlement that came to New Orleans. And they're like, well, what do we do? And so their solution was to entomb the dead in elaborate marble chambers above ground. And so that created one of the city's most lingering attractions, cemeteries that are both historic and just absolutely gorgeous.
I didn't even think about graveyards when I was doing Scotland.
Oh, I'm sure there's some really cool ones.
I'm sure there's some really beautiful ones, especially with all the history. Oh, gosh.
For sure.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Whenever I go anywhere, even if it's not somewhere super historic, I love to go to the graveyards. I've got a thing about graveyards.
Weirdo. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. Well, we are going to do a After Dark episode on graveyard magic at some point. So that will be fun.
Okay.
So the graveyards and cemeteries do have guided tours, but there's a lot that you can actually go and tour on your own because I don't like to be rushed along. I mean, it is one thing to be able to hear the tour guide tell you the history, which is very fascinating. But I also like to spend time looking and thinking and, you know, I don't want to be rushed along to the next thing from one to the next. So there are ones that you can go at your own pace. So that's something to think about, too. And then, of course, haunted houses. They're, you know, New Orleans is considered the city of ghosts. And so there are a lot of haunted houses to visit. And American Horror Story, of course, brought to light one of the most haunted of all, the Delphine LaLaurie house. Mm-hmm. It's a private residence right now. Someone actually lives there, but it is said to be one of the most haunted homes in the city. Isn't that crazy?
I don't know if I would want to live there.
Such atrocities happened there.
I know. I'll visit. Even thinking of that hurts me.
Yeah, hurts me too.
I'll visit.
Yeah. Such a horrific.
I wouldn't want to live there. Yeah. Yeah.
Horrific. So another thing to do in New Orleans, they have Hex Fest every year.
Oh.
And this year it is August 11th through August 13th of 2023. But every year there is a Hex Fest, and they're actually all over the world now. There's one in Paris. There's, I think, one in LA. They're all over the world, but New Orleans has one. And it is a weekend of witchery held in the heart of the historic French Quarter, which is fabulous. I know.
We're going.
And this conference, it opens on a riverboat with a riverboat ritual and dinner. So you start off the whole week with the weekend, I guess, with a ritual with witchcraft. You start off with a bang, and it is held on an authentic steamboat that goes on the Mississippi River. And then you have 2 days after that of workshops, drumming, rituals, and those all take place at the Bourbon Orleans Hotel, which is a venue that is riddled with a history of hauntings of its own.
And we're going.
I really want to go. Hex Fest has gathered witches, root workers, voodoo priests, and other magical teachers from within New Orleans and all around the world. Every year they come and they share their knowledge, and you get to meet other like-minded people. And between all the workshops, then you can go and do some magical shopping. They have an on-site vendor hall, just like Dragon Con does, and you can purchase ritual tools, signed books by authors that are there, magical jewelry, spell crafts made by true practitioners, other witches. I'm like you, I'm sold. I want to go.
We're going. That's all I can say.
We've got till August 11th to the 13th to figure out how to make it happen. And we'll could podcast from there, and we could,
right?
We could interview other witches.
Oh my gosh. How could you imagine cool going up to somebody and be like, hey, this is my podcast. We want you on it now.
Come talk to us. Come talk. Here's some headphones. Come talk to us right now.
Here's a microphone. We don't care what you have to say. We just want you there.
Just say it. Just say it. Another fun thing happens near Halloween every year, and it is the New Orleans Vampire Ball, which is not necessarily witchy, but can be, kind of. It's spooky. And this year, it goes from October 28th into October 29th at about 4 o'clock in the morning. So it starts the night of the 28th, and it's actually it goes over a couple of days, but the ball itself is one night, and they have all these other things that you can do. It's described on its website as Venetian masquerade meets a vampire court with the energy of a rock concert and the elegance of a burlesque cabaret.
I like energy of a rock concert.
Right? How cool is that? And they already posted what their signature drink is this year for coming up for October. It's called the traditional bloodbath. And it is one third chartreuse liqueur, one third cabernet, and one third cranberry juice. The traditional bloodbath.
Oh. Okay, I know very, what drink very we're cool. trying next.
Well, apparently I'm like, what is chartreuse? I know it's a color, but I've never heard of it as a liqueur. And so I looked it up, and it is a liqueur, and it's made in by these Tibetan monks.
Oh, geez.
And there's only two of them now that make them, and they refuse to increase their production. So it's the supply is not anywhere near what the demand is for it. So I don't know that we can find it. It's worth looking for. It's supposed to be a very herbal liqueur.
Okay.
So I don't know, because some herbs I like and some herbs I don't like. If it's rosemary, I don't like rosemary.
Yeah, I was going to say you don't like rosemary. Mm-mm. But it sounds like we're going to have to go in August, and then we're going to have to go in October.
I think that's a plan. And then there's another place that you should visit when you go. It's called Jean Lafitte's Old Absinthe House. And it's a bar, and it is open from 9 a.m. to 4 a.m. every day. And it is named for a pirate who helped end the War of 1812 by defeating the English forces that attempted to advance up the Mississippi River. So they actually met, he and the English officer who met with him to try to convince this pirate to help them because they needed the ships. They met at this house, and where the deal was struck. And he agreed to do it on condition that he and his men received pardons for all the pirating that they had done. And that happened. And so they joined the fight and helped defeat the English. And that's why part of why this house is so important. But the other part is this house itself, when the Prohibition tried to tear it down because, you know, alcohol was made illegal in the 1920s, but they secretly moved it to a warehouse. And they just left the shell of the building, but all of the interior was moved to this warehouse. And so it survived Prohibition. And today it's all back. Everything was moved back, and it's got the same musty brick walls, the same ornate wooden fixtures, the same water dripping fountains for serving absinthe, just like it did in the past.
Wow.
So it's not
like... I need a movie on this.
I know. It's not like the bars on River Street, in the French Quarter that are, you know, full of jazz and people throwing up on the streets. This is a different vibe than that, but really cool history.
Very cool. I need this as a movie right now.
I wonder if there probably is a movie about him. It would be interesting.
But is it made well? Is it a good
question?
Movie?
I don't know. And then Muriel's Jackson Square. This is a restaurant. And this restaurant, the whole second floor of the restaurant is set aside as a séance room. And the story is that the building started off with as a holding facility for slaves being put up for auction in the early 1700s. So it already has an evil past. But then in 1788, that great New Orleans fire partially destroyed it. So a man came in and bought it, Pierre Antoine Lepardi Jourdan. And he spent years and years and years restoring the property and transforming it into this beautiful home for his family. And in 1814, he lost the home in a game of poker. Really, dude? Really?
Are you kidding me?
And he killed himself on the second floor. And so his ghost is seen on the second floor. And they actually reserve a table for him on that second floor. And you can book that table. His table where they actually serve him, and you can go and book the table upstairs for an upcharge, of course. But how cool would that be?
That'd be cool.
To go and have dinner on in the séance room and look for the ghost of this
guy.
That
would be cool.
That would be so cool. So then I was like, well, it's all well and good to go see these places, but where would you stay when you're there? And
valid.
So I was like, I want haunted places, of course.
Of course.
And there are a ton of them. So I only did a couple. Okay. The Le Pavilion Hotel. This is said to be a haunted hotel where even ghost investigators have actually verified the presence of ghosts. There was one group of investigators. They only found 4 ghosts, but 100 appeared and were documented by another paranormal team.
See, if I go and stay at a haunted house or haunted hotel, I'm scared something would attach to me.
It happens. Like Guests have seen ghostly figures standing at the foot of their bed when trying to sleep. Sheets have been tugged off guests as they've slept, and strange noises have been heard, which the noises, it's an old building. So noises, not so much, but someone pulling the sheets off me. Yeah, that would be a little weird. And then one man said that stayed there. He said this gray-haired woman appeared before his eyes. She sat down on his bed, touched him, and her hands were cold. And she said she'd never let him go, and then she vanished. Isn't that creepy?
See, did she attach herself to him?
Never heard what happened to him after that. I don't know.
No.
The Le Richelieu, R-I-C-H-E-L-I-E-U Hotel. Richelieu, it's Frenchish. Some stories say that the land that La Richelieu was built upon was once a site of numerous executions.
Okay.
And then you also see ghosts of Spanish soldiers wandering the property in their uniforms. And the most common places to see the Spanish soldiers are in the bar and the swimming pool. Two places that Renan River would be for sure.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. The Omni Royal Orleans is a luxury hotel, and it is a beautiful hotel. It has fine dining. It's got art and antique stores. It's just a beautiful place. And it also offers the chance to run into a ghost or two. So some of the spirits that haunt the Omni Royal Orleans have a sense of humor, and they like to play pranks on people. The ghost of a maid from the 18th century likes tucking the hotel guests into their bed at night. It's reported that this ghost goes even further than that. She's been known to flush a toilet or two at different times and run a bath. lights are known to come on in the middle of the night by an unseen ghost, and some spirits will attach to guests and follow them around the hotel, while other guests like to move things around, you know, from places where the guests had hit them.
Wow.
So that's
Imagine you go and put down something important from your suitcase, and then you turn around, it's not there, and you're just like, where's my deodorant?
Where did I put it?
Where's my phone charger? Yeah.
I swear I unpacked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the ghosts are going,
yeah. Hey, I have it. Yeah.
Wonder how long let's take a bet on how long it'll take her to find it. And then, I mean, there's tons of hotels and things that are haunted there that you can stay in, but also keep in mind Airbnb and Vrbo. I was looking on there, and there are some places that you can stay. There was one place that had a room. You can't, it wasn't the whole place, but it was a room in a haunted place, which was interesting. And it had several accounts of ghosts and what you see there. And then you could also probably find a really cute witchy cottage to stay at if you're looking for that vibe. How fun would that be?
I would love that. I would love that.
Yeah, especially if you really are worried about ghosts attaching to you or whatever. Just find a witchy cottage to stay
in. I'd do a little cottage vibe and just travel into town.
So that's all I have on New Orleans. There is so much. I mean, so much to do there. Lots of TV shows are set there. There's, you know, it's such a real, it's a cool place. And I actually have never been.
No, I've never been. And we're going August 11th through the 14th or whatever that last date was.
Yeah, we probably already have to register by now. I don't know. We'll have to look into it.
Yeah, you're right. We're going.
And so we might be there, y'all. And maybe you can come be on our podcast.
It would be so much fun.
That would be fun. Okay, I forgot to write out the outro. So you want to do the outro?
Sure. That's all we have. You can find us at our website at www.c3witchypodcast.com. Mm-hmm. There you will find links to all of our social medias, our links to our Patreon, all of our information, stuff on our merch, and also about our subscriptions. We have a whole page on subscriptions where it tells you what you get with each subscription. So don't forget to look at that before you guys subscribe. And I don't know what else.
Speaking of, for the patrons, I am making some, I'm working on a Sabbath preparation books, fill in the blank to help. And so I'm working on the Letha one now. I'm hoping to get it up soon. I'll put some free pages on there for you. It's too long to offer the whole thing, but I'll put on some free pages. And everybody else, you can find those. You'll be able to find them soon at my store, my Etsy, Bats and Baubles, Etsy.com. My store, the link is on somewhere. Anyway, so don't forget that.
I just put a spell up on Patreon as well. And then I have been coming up with some recipes since Letha is coming up, and I know we need some recipes. So I have a couple recipes that I'm posting on Patreon and maybe something else or so, but I think
that'll be fun. Yeah, my Letha workbook, which I'm going to do one of these workbooks for every Sabbath, so that if you want to plan something elaborate or if you want to plan something simple, it helps walk you through the questions to ask and what to do. But on my Letha one, I also have two recipes that I'm including in that booklet. So yeah, fun stuff. Thank you guys for listening.
Yes, thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. Thank you for our supporters. You guys rock.
Absolutely.
We've had some new ones on come on board. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We couldn't do this
without you.
I always
love it. I love it when we get a new subscriber, and not, not just because they're a subscriber, but because every single time, most of them go, I found you. I've listened to all these episodes and y'all are fantastic. So I subscribed, and it just makes my heart so happy that you guys enjoy us enough to even listen to our podcast.
Yes, that it makes our day. Thank you so much.
Yes.
We'll be back.
We'll be back.
And until then, stay witchy.
Woo.